So now, moving on to today's talk by Sofia Cardenuto. I'm very pleased that she has she's coming here to speak with us. She, I think, just recently finished her PhD at the University of Freiburg and has been working for a number of years, particularly in the Congo, but in other parts of the world as well, for the unique forestry firm. And she has specialized particularly in reducing emissions from deforestation and degradation, REDD+, and also forest law enforcement, governance and trade, FLEG-T. So for those of you who aren't familiar with those acronyms, I'm sure she'll give you a little bit of background, but she has a lot of really in-depth field experience, and I'm really looking forward to what you have to say. So, Sofia.
Thank you. Great. Oh, thanks. Yeah. So, first of all, a very heartfelt thank you to all of you for being here today, especially to you, Connie, for first introducing me to the Oxford Center for Tropical Forests now already a couple years ago. So I'm very excited to be here today and share with all of you some insights from my work. So to introduce myself, I'm a visiting researcher now at Nuffield College, but I'm still working for my company, Unique Forestry and Land Use, which is based in Freiburg in Germany. So I have a PhD in forest policy and governance from the University of Freiburg, and like I said, I'm working full-time for Unique Forestry and Land Use. So today I'm going to speak about the specific case of Cameroon, which for those of you working on other tropical forest countries may exemplify some of the common issues that are faced when dealing with international forest policy implementation. So hopefully this is interesting for those of you who may not be working in Cameroon or even in the context of Africa. So to give you an overview of what I'm presenting today, I'll first talk about some of the key concepts and current initiatives related to REDD+ that are important for understanding the material that I'm going to be presenting later. Thereafter, I'm briefly going to introduce the case of Cameroon, including the latest state of knowledge regarding the drivers of deforestation and forest degradation there. And then I'm going to use some concrete examples from the field to paint a real picture of the difficulties currently facing REDD+ policymakers and practitioners. So first we'll have a look at the growing momentum surrounding the private sector's commitment to zero deforestation supply chains and how this can be linked to REDD+ using the so-called jurisdictional approach. And next I'm going to talk about a few lessons that have been learned through the European Union's Forest Law Enforcement, Governance and Trade Initiative, which is an action plan to address illegal logging through demand and supply side measures, so also something using international supply chains as the key as a key point of entering into dealing with forest governance issues. So I'll be sure to give enough time to have time for questions and discussions at the end. Some of the work I'm presenting here today, especially related to the zero deforestation commitments, is ongoing research, so I really look forward to hearing your comments and feedback on that especially. And I did my best to tailor this presentation to a broad audience, so I know many of you may not be as familiar with REDD+ or FLEG-VPA, so I'm going to introduce those again in the beginning. But if at any point during the presentation I'm using too many acronyms or too much jargon, just please raise your hand and stop me, and we can provide some more repetition of that. So yeah, moving along. Before I really begin, I want to just briefly introduce the company that I'm working for. So Unique Forestry and Land Use is a consulting firm that focuses on, forests and land use, specifically also the timber sector. helping in general transitions to sustainable forest management and sustainable land use. So I'm personally in the climate division. There's five divisions at my company, and within the climate division, there's three core areas that we're looking at. So policy and governance is dealing with mainly supporting governments and financial institutions in their efforts to design forest and climate policy initiatives that can be operationalized within different governance contexts. And implementation in the land sector is supporting climate smart innovation, agriculture, and forestry projects, including the development of business models that help to address unsustainable land management practices. And finally, monitoring an MRV of these various efforts. So we're about 60 people in total, and these employees are spread all around the world. Here's just a brief glance at the countries that we're working in and the different offices that we have in various countries where we have projects. So now to really begin. So for those of you not familiar with REDD+, this is a climate mitigation mechanism that was introduced to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change, the UNFCCC, given that various estimates suggest that anywhere between 10 to 30% of global greenhouse gas emissions come from forest and land use change. So a lot of that is deforestation and forest degradation. So REDD+ is an acronym that comprises five eligible activities. So we have deforestation, forest degradation that embrace the role of forests in reducing greenhouse gas emissions, so avoiding the avoiding emissions from deforestation and forest degradation. And then the last three eligible activities, conservation, sustainable management of forests, and enhancement of forest carbon stocks, refer to the plus of REDD. So this is also embracing the role of forests in sequestering carbon and storing that over the long term in forest ecosystems. So since REDD+ was introduced in the international climate change negotiations about 10 years ago, it has evolved quite substantially to use what some term an integrated landscape approach, whereby REDD+ is considered a comprehensive package to address various drivers of deforestation and underlying causes of deforestation. So an integrated landscape approach would include a broader suite of measures at the institutional level to create what is called an enabling environment for low carbon investments. And this is combined with what can be termed sector interventions that support sustainable land use practices through concrete investments on the ground and activities that improve forest and land management. Now, the critical element of REDD+ that makes it stand out when compared to official development aid in environmental sector is that REDD+ is fundamentally based on these performance-based payments for net emission reductions. So performance is measured by how many tons of carbon emissions are avoided by leaving forests standing, or how many tons of emissions tons of carbon are sequestered by planting trees or by restoring forests. So this performance is most often measured at the national or subnational level or the jurisdiction. So I'll explain a bit more what is meant by a jurisdiction. So a jurisdiction corresponds to administrative boundaries, which allow for REDD+ measures to include government-mandated activities or measures such as policy reforms or the creation of what I term the enabling environment on the last slide. So here's a map of Cameroon that shows its diverse agroecological zones. Agroecological zones are geographic areas that exhibit more or less similar climatic conditions that determine the zone's ability to support rain-fed agriculture. So Cameroon is quite a diverse country, reflected by these five zones, and the government has decided that its Red Plus strategy should reflect this diversity. So the Red Plus strategy should have different activities for these different agroecological zones to reflect those different contexts. So to allow for jurisdictional Red Plus, these more biophysical zones have been delineated into administrative zone or administrative boundaries. So these red lines correspond to regions, and the smaller kind of grayish lines correspond to districts, but it might be more difficult to see these. So if you zoom into the southwest area, which has some very dense forest cover remaining, this is the monomodal forest zone. If you zoom in here, you can see that there's quite a lot of forest cover remaining, just shown by the green. At the same time, there's a lot of deforestation happening, which you can see by the pink. So this would be a very interesting area to do an avoided deforestation project moving forward. So a jurisdictional red scheme would entail that the Red Plus policies and measures should take place across the entirety of this area. So we want to cover all the districts included in this zone. So this is opposed to a project-based approach where you would only do Red Plus in specific localities, like in a community forest or in a protected area. So it's important to note that for jurisdictional Red Plus, the reference level or the deforestation baseline upon which performance is judged is at the jurisdictional level. So in order for this Red Plus jurisdiction to be eligible for performance-based payments, deforestation would have to be reduced across the whole area. So this raises the bar quite high for all land users in that area, and it also means that there's quite a lot of risks involved for the government or different stakeholders that are implementing Red Plus when it comes to actually having a successful Red Plus program. So next I want to introduce another important concept about how Red Plus is meant to work in theory. And so this is the so-called phased approach of RED. So it starts with the so-called readiness phase. I'd like to point out that most Red Plus countries are in this readiness phase, readiness or investment. Only Brazil has so far received performance-based payments for Red Plus. So to go a bit more into detail, readiness is where capacity building measures take place, where forest monitoring systems are built so that emission reductions can be verified through official forest monitoring systems. This is also where national RED strategies are developed. So next we have the investment phase, where RED Plus strategies are implemented. And finally, we have the results-based payments phase, or the last phase, where results in terms of verified emission reductions or sequestration carbon dioxide equivalents are paid for. So who finances these different phases? The first readiness phase is mostly grant-based finance from multilateral development banks. Of course, there's some there is in-kind investment from different Red Plus countries. The most well-known of bilateral or multilateral support is the so-called Forest Carbon Partnership Facility, or FCPF. And so this is a fund facilitated by the World Bank to mostly support readiness. The next phase, who's funding that, is very critical, because this is where the investments need to incur that lead to a change in current behavior that can transform land use systems to actually generate emission reductions. So because the performance-based payments obviously are paid based on performance, they're ex post payments. So this investment phase, it's what we've seen in many Red Plus countries, is that it's very difficult for these countries to actually finance this investment phase. So here it's expected that the government should mobilize quite a lot of finance, and especially the private sector is meant to play a very big role in mobilizing a lot of the finance that should generate the emission reductions that will then in the future be paid for. I just want to point out at this stage that this whole concept of performance-based payments has very recently received, further justification by the Green Climate Fund, that announced that it's going to set aside $50 million to test this so-called performance-based payment system or results-based payment system through Red Plus. So even though there's very few countries that have reached this final stage, it is still a very highly sought-after goal that the global community is searching after. But anyway, to zoom into this idea of private sector financing implementation of Red Plus, fortunately, there is a lot of growing commitment surrounding, on behalf of the private sector, at the international level to reduce deforestation related to the production of key commodities that are known to cause the majority of forest loss at the global level. So as some of you may know, agriculture is the biggest driver of global or tropical forest loss, and significant deforestation can be linked to specific commodities and specific geographic areas. So recognizing this, there's been a large number of companies and within those companies, various commitments to reduce deforestation in their supply chains. Now, most of them deal with the so-called big four commodities, which are palm, soy, timber and pulp and paper, and cattle. But there's also growing momentum for other commodities, such as cocoa, which I'm pointing out today because I'm going to go into more detail on that shortly. But needless to say, in cocoa, there's recently been an announcement by 12 cocoa-producing companies that they're going to make an effort to reduce deforestation in that supply chain, and the concrete action plan of how they will do this and by when they will do this will be announced at the next conference of parties for the climate change negotiations in Bonn in Germany this upcoming November. So after this lengthy introduction, I'm now going to jump to the case of Cameroon. As you can see by the green, Cameroon is a largely forested country holding a significant amount of the Congo Basin tropical forest. So the Congo Basin is one of the world's most important tropical forest biomes, which has been relatively spared from a lot of the deforestation that we've seen in other areas, such as the Amazon and Southeast Asia. However, the Congo Basin has recently been flagged for being the next forest frontier, where there's a lot of risk for expansion of commercial agriculture or destructive mining infrastructure development, causing large-scale deforestation in this area, as we've witnessed in some other areas in the past. So much of this forest frontier dynamic is happening right now in Cameroon as we speak. And now this has been recognized for quite some time. Cameroon has been engaged in this illegal logging initiative, FLECT and Red Plus, for more than 10 years now. Cameroon was one of the first countries to enter into a voluntary partnership agreement or a trade agreement with the EU to reduce illegal logging from its national timber production. This is partly due to a study back in the early 2000s that suggested that the majority of illegal logging, or the majority of illegal timber found on the EU market was stemming from Cameroon. Now, this might also be because a lot of the timber coming from neighboring countries like Congo and Gabon may be going through Cameroon through its major export hub in Douala. And of course, the country is currently developing a Red Plus strategy. So just to give a bit more context, Cameroon has systematically been ranked very low on human development indicators and various human rights, democracy indices. But needless to say, a considerable amount of the population is quite poor and living in rural areas. In rural areas, the poverty rates are especially high. So FLECT and Red Plus both have a very important aim to support economic development for the country and especially rural development, given that forests and the environment have the potential to generate quite a lot of rural employment and rural development. So moving on, here we're showing some results from a very recent study that looks at deforestation and the drivers of deforestation in Cameroon. So Cameroon has an estimated, depending on the exact forest definition that you use, anywhere between 30 to 50 million hectares of forest. So here, we're taking a closer look at the deforestation trends, and we see that deforestation has accelerated very significantly in the past couple years. A lot of this is happening in the dense forest areas in the southwest where I zoomed in, and also in the southeast, covering the lower part of the country. So the justification for Red Plus is quite strong and even growing. There's been some more recent analysis by the University of Maryland looking more closely at the case of Cameroon, which confirms that deforestation is indeed rising very, very fast. So looking a bit closer at what this deforestation is, or what formerly forest areas are being converted to, we can, by overlaying these spatial layers, we can see that previously, forested areas are mainly converted to agriculture. Over about 95% is being converted to agriculture. This is based on the Globe Cover database. And zooming in a bit more, we can even see that, taking a closer look, if you look at the size of the contiguous forest loss happening within Cameroon, we can see that it's mainly comprised of areas that are less than 1 hectare. So you can see here by the green. So it's actually not this large-scale commercial agro-industrial agriculture, which many of, well, I don't know what many people think, but it's actually very smallholder or small-scale agriculture that's the main cause of deforestation. So even though there's been some media attention in the past on Cameroon for large-scale expansion of commercial agriculture, we see that it's really, a lot of it is very, very small scale. So just to, before I go into more detail, I just want to go back to what I was talking about in the beginning in terms of the phased approach to Red Plus. And now that we've seen that there's quite a good justification for doing Red Plus in Cameroon, exemplified by these drastic and increasing deforestation rates, it's important to point out that the government remains largely in the readiness phase, where a national strategy is currently being developed, where there's different analytical studies that are being carried out, and the forest monitoring system is being built. So what I'm mainly going to talk to you about today is how my work is helping to move the country from readiness to the investment phase, and some of the challenges that we've been encountering there. So before I do so, I just want to highlight again that, just to keep in mind, that as we can see in numerous Red Plus countries, the government's official objective for Red Plus is less about emission reductions and a lot more about promoting sustainable development. Red Plus in Cameroon is seen as a tool to reduce poverty and create green jobs and rural development in some of the poorest areas of the country. Maybe some of you, I don't know if you're familiar with the UNFCCC negotiations, but Cameroon's negotiator for Red Plus is very often known, Dr. Amagou is very often known for saying that carbon, in the case of Cameroon, is just the cherry on the cake, and that they're not so interested in the carbon as they are in the development opportunities that this can imply, the economic development opportunities that it can achieve for the country. So having said that, now I just want to zoom in to a very specific case of cocoa, which is important because this commodity has been identified during the readiness phase for having important potential for Red Plus implementation. So in the case of Cameroon, we have an estimated 600,000 smallholders that are engaged in cocoa production, and an even larger amount of population that is indirectly engaged in this economy. It's the second most important export after oil, so it's also strategically important for the country's national growth strategy. So given what we know also about smallholder agriculture being the main driver of deforestation, this may also be an interesting case to show what some of these smallholders typically look like. But the case of cocoa is a cash crop, and this is, in the case of Cameroon, it's only grown by smallholders. So it's not something that's being produced at the commercial, large-scale commercial level. So it's mainly done by family farms using traditional agroforestry methods. It's also relevant to talk about cocoa in Cameroon because Cameroon is the third largest producer of cocoa in Africa after Ghana and Cote d'Ivoire, and in the world after Indonesia, Cameroon is the fourth largest producer. And just another reason why this is important is because the government has identified the cocoa sector as a key sector for growth, and the Ministry of Agriculture aims to increase the production of cocoa, more than double it by 2020. So typically cocoa farms are gradually established by clearing forest and planting not only cocoa trees but also other crops, so food crops or different tree species that produce other valuable goods for the farmers. So here I want to just compare Cameroon's typical diverse agroforestry systems with what we've seen in some other countries, such as Cote d'Ivoire and Ivory Coast, where you have the so-called full sun cocoa production system, which has been shown to have higher yields potentially in the short term, but also has much lower biodiversity, much lower carbon stocks, and is maybe not as sustainable in the long term because the ecosystem becomes quite vulnerable to external shocks such as drought or various pests. Of course, cocoa in Cameroon also has other diseases and pests related to that, but I'm not going to go into detail today. So the key question is really, where is this production, this increase in cocoa production, going to come from? If we know that Cameroon has a strategy to increase cocoa production, and it's also going to be a focus of Red Plus. So this is a farmer's, this is some data that was very recently compiled by the Center for International Forestry Research, C4, where they asked farmers, what was your land prior to being a cocoa agroforest? And you can see by the purple that the majority of land prior to being a cocoa agroforest was primary forest. So of course this changes quite significantly based on which area we're looking at, but it's still a very critical question to ask. How can we ensure that the objectives to increase cocoa production can happen through farm intensification rather than expansion of cocoa farms into the forest? So how can this be done? So here's some ideas, some preliminary strategies for how Red Plus can ensure that smallholder agriculture is increasing productivity or increasing overall production without expanding into forests, but rather by increasing yields per hectare. So this would fit nicely with the dual objective of Red Plus in Cameroon to not only reduce emissions, but also promote sustainable development. So the problem is not so simple, because first of all, how do you actually increase those yields in practice? Thousands of dispersed smallholder farmers operating in very remote areas with poor infrastructure, poor access to roads, or no roads in some cases, very, very little knowledge, no access to inputs about how to apply those different inputs. So this is where engaging the private sector would play a key role, private sector being identified here as commodity buyers, who have their on-the-ground networks and supply chains and sourcing strategies where they're already working with a lot of smallholders to source their cocoa. There's already existing extension service schemes being applied by these private sector actors. So how can we engage the private sector to really tap into the networks that they've already organized on the ground? So at the same time, there's a need to involve the government, because increasing yields per hectare must be combined with other strategies, governance strategies, to ensure that the increased profits that are made by higher yields are not invested in further expansion of forests. So identifying which forests are remaining and how those can be protected through having a land use planning strategy, how tenure can be increased, or tenure security can be increased, so that the investments made on given areas will provide security for farmers to want to plant more trees and ensure that their cocoa farming is continue to be done in agroforest system. And most importantly, also addressing some of the underlying causes of forest or farm expansion, where many farmers in some of these contexts are cutting down forests in order to claim rights to more and more land. So I guess everyone has a role to play in this scheme, and the Red Plus jurisdictional approach has been proposed as a way to bring these different actors together on the same table to align incentives to have sustainable intensification and forest protection at the same time. So this is a concept that I'm going to be looking at in more detail over the next months, including through time spent in Cameroon, discussing this with different stakeholders and trying to get more ideas about their interests to engage in such a scheme and what could be their role in contributing to operationalizing this scheme. So at the moment, this Red Plus jurisdictional approach combined with sustainable commodity sourcing is something that's being tested in a number of different countries as kind of pilot approaches for implementing Red Plus. So it will be interesting to see if this is relevant in the case of Cameroon, and if so, what are the different measures that would need to be put in place in order to make this possible. So very briefly, I just want to discuss some lessons that may have been learned from this international initiative focusing on timber supply chains, and what are the insights that have been gained there from international timber trade, and how you can source timber sustainably or source it legally. So what we've seen from efforts on Flag T is that it's easiest for large companies to gain the requirements or meet the standards required to meet legality. But it's very different for smaller actors, such as those operating informally to serve more local markets. So how can we ensure that these zero deforestation commitments or standards, so to speak, are not further marginalizing some of the very smallholder farmers and not causing the cocoa production, the traditional agroforestry systems for how cocoa is currently being produced in Cameroon, to not transition to full sun, more intensified, more professionalized cocoa production as we've seen in other countries. So we've already seen there's been some think tanks, one called Supply Change, that has done an analysis on zero deforestation commitments, and they've already found that companies with zero deforestation commitments are twice as large as companies that don't have zero deforestation commitments. So maybe this is not surprising, but we're already seeing this happening in the zero deforestation, in the momentum surrounding zero deforestation commitments. So this is really something that should be flagged when moving forward with operationalizing this. So to conclude, I just want to mention a few more challenges that can already be highlighted at this early stage. So first, one of the major challenges to multi-stakeholder collaboration is that including the private sector or having these multi-stakeholder initiatives is difficult because especially the private sector just has different operational timelines compared to the bureaucracies of the government or communities. So there needs to be some alignment some concessions made on different sides regarding how they can be worked together and how the end of the day bottom line of the private sector can still be met, even if they're working with the government. Something that I was mentioning earlier about excluding or marginalizing some of the smallest operators in these different supply chains. So how can we ensure that these supply chain verification schemes, such as that being introduced by Zero Deforestation Commodities, are not excluding some of the smallest and poorest producers. And land use planning is a very hot topic, also an old topic. How can this be integrated with these zero deforestation commitments? And at the moment, this jurisdictional approach seems the most promising to avoid the so-called rebound effect, where investments in productivity actually don't lead to reduced deforestation, but lead to further expansion into the forest. And of course, tenure security is an ongoing issue, and very difficult, because in the context of Cameroon, as in many other countries, tenure security is based on customary rights and customary norms that are not always compatible with these international standardization schemes. So, of course, there's a lot of vested interest in not changing the status quo and how to manage different conflicts that may arise when an initiative like Zero Deforestation Cocoa says we cannot have investments in increased productivity without having at the same time some type of official tenure security. So it just raises a whole, opens a whole box of conflicts there. So I'm sure there's a lot of other issues that should be discussed. So thank you very much for your time. And now I'll open the floor to everyone.